Hi there, I'm Barry Forward, and welcome to the Reboot Forward podcast. This is the podcast where we take a deep dive into the wonderful world of change, reinvention, transformation, and just plain doing something different. In particular, how it impacts the people who go through that change, what they've learned from their journey through change, and ultimately, what has allowed them to reboot forward. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about the changing world of recruiting, executive recruitment, and the fine art of sourcing great talent. Joining me is recruiter Raymond Toe. Raymond has been recruiting and doing HR advisory work for the past 30 years or so. Raymond owns and operates two brands in the recruitment space, GoRecruitment.com, which supports technology companies, and GoFuturesHR.com, which recruits senior leaders, superintendents, secretary treasurers for the school districts in the province of British Columbia, Canada. Recruitment has undergone some significant changes over the past several years, particularly with the advent of artificial intelligence into the sourcing process. I thought I'd ask Raymond to join us to share his insights into the changes that have impacted his industry. Everything's changing. Recruitment has changed as well for many reasons. What have you seen as the biggest change in your industry as a recruiter, executive recruiter, over the past few years?
Yeah, so I was in preparation for this chat, I look back at some of the clients we've had in the last 3 years and see what they've been doing. But so I'll answer it three ways. One is that the companies, the employers themselves, are now have a tendency to do it themselves. So that's one kind of change that's been more significantly observed the last few years. The other one is the constant battle or balance between using technology and old-fashioned relationship building, which we can talk about. And I guess the third one is the type of people who are entering recruitment. When I first started, you know, almost 30 years ago, it was an unknown industry. And now it's actually, I think, quite popular for the millennials, the people who are graduating from university. They have a different view of recruiting. So those three things.
So when you look at it, you say that the some of the employers are doing it themselves. Folks are the landscape's changed. And what does it mean in terms of getting the best candidates? Because ultimately, that's what it's about. Is people have positions availability? What has it meant to that piece of the pie?
Yeah, I mean, from the employer's perspective? So I think one driver for that change was, I guess, the high fees and also the unfortunate experience sometimes with poor service. So those two things, you know, paying a lot of money for poor service, let's try to do it themselves. So I think most industries go through this ebb and flow. Do we outsource it or do we in-house it?
Have you seen that happen big time in the pandemic had its own influence on everything. It must have really kind of shaken it up a bit. My observation, having been on sort of one end of working with recruiters, is just saw a little bit of retrenchment back to the employers. Did you see that happening? And what has that done to speed up or lessen that process of the companies trying to do it themselves?
Yeah, I think the pandemic has actually either accelerated that or necessitated it. It was probably more the latter. So what happened, like say last spring, was companies continued to hire. There was a period of pause for a couple of months. And when they came out of unpause, they said there's access to a greater pool of candidates. And looks like candidates are also more interested in looking at companies. So we can talk about that. So that collision of these two trends, companies say, well, let's just try it ourselves because we have access. We have to these people. People are more open to actually interviewing. And with technology and Zoom, it is a lot easier than scheduling, an in-person drive, 20, 30 minutes to go to an interview. And you can crank these out a lot faster. So I think that process has been shortened.
You mentioned to me before we got onto this conversation that you, at the beginning of the pandemic, you were playing a lot of tennis. teaching tennis, in fact, because there was the work just dried right up. Now it's coming back. I imagine you're busy now. What has happened differently? What does it mean to your life now, working back, doing what you love doing?
So our business is exactly mirrored the NASDAQ. So if you look at that, it looks exactly that. So say April, May last year, it dropped off the cliff and then it came roaring back and even better than, or, you know, more busier than it was pre-pandemic. So that's what we saw. We literally, you know, business dropped to 90%. And then it was quiet for a couple of months. I pivoted a little bit, like launched my own podcast, gone back to teaching tennis, still had clients, but just not the same volume. And then say July, August, September, okay, companies, we're hiring again. Things seems okay. And now it's actually even busier since September, October. It's even busier than before. So if I look at the 30-year history of like our business every year, 2020 is going to end up being one of our top 5 or 6 years. It's in like, so it's strange.
So walk me through the whole recruitment process from your end. I mean, I know it's complicated and it's a lot more than I'm trying to simplify and get you to simplify it here. But, you know, ultimately there are positions that need to be filled. Companies internally don't have the resources or the wherewithal to find those folks, and they reach out to someone like you. What is your process for finding good talent for them? How do you go through it all?
I use the 3S to make it simple, and it does look like a reverse funnel, right? So it's the three S's. So the first S is source, the second S is screen, and then the third one is secure. Because each one of those steps are actually, there's a lot more subtleties and work involved. Sourcing just means finding people who will talk to you. So, because they may not be qualified, right? But you, as a recruiter or the recruitment process, you need to reach out to a large amount of people. And then from there, those who respond to you say, I am looking. It sounds interesting what your job position is. Then you go into the screen. I mean, the screen is, you know, making sure there's a 75% fit. And then from there, then the client and the candidate will have a conversation. They do their interview. And then often it gets punted back to me to the secure. The secure is part of what I mean by the salary negotiation. You know, whether there's any flexibility, start dates, RSUs. A lot of companies have that, so we had to work through that complicated process. So, yeah, source, secure, source, screen, and secure.
So, as a sourcer, you know, from there's two sides of it, and the viewpoints. I'm trying to, because some people listening to this will be from two viewpoints: people who would hire someone like you, and then the people who are looking or might be considered for a role. How would sourcing be experienced, or how would you outline it for the people hiring you? And then what does it mean for the candidates?
Yeah, I'll speak about the candidates first. So if a candidate is looking for a position, ultimately the goal is a match, right? So you want to be found because people are trying to find you, right? So I'm kind of touched on both sides a little bit. So if people are looking for someone like you, you want to make sure you can be found. So either through old-fashioned relationships, you know, getting your name out there to a recruiter in your specialty, social media, you know, the LinkedIn profiles, and just old-fashioned, I keep saying old-fashioned networking, you know, talking to people, having conversations that are with people in your relevant, you know, world of what you're searching for. So I think that speaks a little bit about the candidate side, right? I can go more later on. And then on the client company side, looking to find people. So our biggest value prop is time and expertise. They can, you know, this job, you can do it yourself. It's just a matter of how much time you have to. So we have the advantage. This is the advertorial part. You know, we build up a database of relationships. So when they do hire us, we can at least have a quicker head start, right? Rather than starting from zero. Theoretically, if you asked me to find a job that I've never searched for, I could do it just using the skill set, but it might take me a long time to, you know, find out who are the right people to talk to. So I tell companies, you know, time and expertise and reach is what they're getting.
So there's two aspects that I'd like to kind of dive into there a little bit. One is the technology that I think is becoming more and more available to the companies, sourcing software, if you will, artificial intelligence, and then, of course, the ability to go access a database of contacts like you have, people you already know, right? Yeah. And so I'd like to talk about that because the candidates, I think, will be really interested in that. But in terms of the sourcing and the, you know, where you actually reach out, I was listening to one of your podcast episodes and you talked about Boolean searches and getting all that right. How does the artificial intelligence supersede all that or come into play?
If there's a lot of data, well, actually, yeah, artificial is very useful. So in historical terms, right, when the World Wide Web came along, it was supposed to disintermediate a lot of the brokers, right, in between all business models. And the web came along and a lot of recruiters were worried that, oh, that means that our jobs are going to disappear. And if I learned from that lesson, it ended up being not so. It may have actually been a tool that made our industry more productive, right, because we could reach more. The end employer ended up being overwhelmed with the access to all this data. So now today, AI can, I guess, remove a lot of that labor-intensive part. So in a magical world, it's the value prop from a lot of these AI providers say, hey, Raymond, you can actually tell us what you want, enter your requirements, and then wait. And then next morning, you'll get a list of people that we have scrubbed, you know, online everywhere. So that has helped more productivity. I use it to an extent, but not a lot, because the results I get back still need to be vetted, because I really don't know who that person is on the other side of that inbox.
Right? Because ultimately what you're wanting to do is have a good sample size of qualified candidates that you can put in front or that are in front of a hiring opportunity, correct? And that's correct. What the whole goal. So, the way I see it is that someone puts in their terms and they wake up in the morning and there's a list of 30 people, 50 people, 20 that they can phone, start calling.
Yes, that's right. So it's removed. When I first started, I literally had to go through almost like a phone book or a directory. And I would do phone call after phone call, you know, make 10 phone calls in the morning, maybe have one or two live conversations. And so that took up a whole half day just to, you know, do that. And now technically I don't have to spend that time. I do my data entry and then I wait for the AI to do its stuff.
So give the pitch. Okay. Yeah. So, I'm an employer thinking of hiring a recruiter to help me out here. The question is, with all this going on, why would I do it?
Which part? Why would you
hire you? Hire you to take help me through this recruitment process.
So usually, there's a pain that they're feeling in their business. It could be a time to market for their product. So there might be a limited window for competitive reasons. So one kind of company we work with is an early stage company that's funded. And they now need to, for lack of a better word, spend that money to grow. They're not sitting on the money as a bank. So if they need to hit their market timing, they need some help, pour all resources in, find the good people. So I tell them the value pitch would be, I save you time. I can get it filled faster than if you do it yourself. That's it at the core. So their pain is speed to market. Another pain would be we've lost someone due to attrition, or they quit, or it just didn't work out, but they're supporting or building something quite critical to our ongoing business. So if it's vacant, a month, 2 months, that's hurting our operational, you know, business. So that's another value add. I'll find you someone quickly without any disruption to your business. So I guess those are often the two core pitch. The other subtleties would be probably know the right people, the quality individuals. I might have a previous relationship with them because I've either placed them before or they were bridesmaids candidates, and all the references, all the vetting has been done already. So they're known entities. They're not just a piece of paper that we pulled out of the internet.
So let's talk a bit about that. I'll call it the database that you have, people, the relationships that you have already. And it's for candidates, many times this is a bit of a mystery how that comes together from a recruitment point of view. So, what does it mean to you to have this this stable of candidates? And how does one get on that list?
Yeah. So what it means to me, it is my gold mine. It's something of value. It's something I need to nurture and keep and build. So it's mission critical, because at the end of the day, I was thinking, what is my core business? It is making a match. That's the outcome. But my day-to-day is gathering and vetting information, right? I don't have a product. I have a reputation, but it's information. Information about the candidate's performance, their history, their personality, right? So this information has to be current and good, because it helps my employer, my client, make a decision, right, at the end of the day. So to get on that is communication, you know, outreach. Send me an email. Later on, we can, you know, I'll give out my contact information. Tell me about yourself, right? Because often I like to build that database, even though I don't have a job today, but you are someone that's currently working, and I like to stay in touch with you when there is time for a change. Often I'll even give people a chance to, not give them a chance, when it's a salary review time and they want some data points, I get calls like that. Raymond, my performance review is coming up. I think I'm going to get a raise. I'm not sure if that's a competitive raise. Do you have a sense what I may be worth on the market? So that's another way that they can use that in that information that I have.
So over the years, you've kind of been working with people, you've been sourcing people, you've been talking to people, bridesmaids have been in various job search opportunities. I'm out looking and I see a position over on the Go Recruitment website or something. Mm-hmm. And I go, hey, I'm interested in that. Is that a time to reach out? When's the best time, and how should someone reach out to the likes of you, a recruiter who's doing the work that you do?
Yeah. If I was a candidate, knowing what I know, it's kind of funny, right? Knowing what how the industry works, I guess the answer to the first question is there is no, any time is a good time, because, you know, change is constant. You never know when you might be looking. Either you're forced into that position, or you're thinking it's time to move on. So there is no good time. Just reach out to a recruiter tomorrow. That's someone you trust in your field, because establish that relationship, because you never know what will happen tomorrow. And how they do that is a simple, hey, Raymond, I see you are in my area. This is what I do. I like to sort of tell you about myself. I like to tell you what may trigger me to make a change. Because that criteria, that ABC list of what will trigger you to make a change, will be something I keep privately. And then if I do see a company 6 months, 6 years down the road, I will alert you.
I know it's probably going to seem really granular, but when I look at it, like, because I work on the other side, I'm working with candidates and folks trying to navigate this you know, opportunity landscape. Yeah. And they say, should I connect with them on LinkedIn? Should I email them? Should I call them? What's the best way?
Email.
Email just gets the info in front of you.
Yeah. Okay. A phone call. Phone call is great too. It's just literally, I will forget, right? A phone call, because when you're calling me and then I'm taking down notes and I have to transcribe it back. Now, I would still encourage a conversation, a Zoom call, because I would like to see your face, right? At some point. But at the beginning, if you're not actively looking, but you're just wanting to stay in tune with the market, probably an email and be open about it. Hey, this is why I'm contacting you. Don't spend too much time making a match now, because I'm not ready. But if you see this, I would like to be alerted. Then the other end is people who are actively looking, they need a job now. Then probably a phone call and an email. Now, LinkedIn is great too, Barry. So I shouldn't ignore that. So please do send me an invite on LinkedIn. And if it's relevant, 90% of the time I will accept it, because most of my invites are relevant. Like, they are in an area I would be interested in.
And I know you do a lot of Google searches. You Google people. You're looking at social media. How important is it for someone to have their profile up to speed, current, even though they're embedded in an organization or they're on the lookout?
Yeah, 100%. Earlier to my sourcing process, right? Someone's trying to find you, so make sure you can be found. Yeah, that's kind of the maxim.
And the things that you need in there. And I'm getting into firing line stuff, because there's so many questions that come up, because people say, you know, what do I need to do? Do I keyword? What do I, my resume? Do you need a cover letter? All these questions just pop into mind. But on LinkedIn, it seems like you want to be able to track somebody down, find them, you know, say, be alerted that they exist as a value proposition, and then be able to contact them.
Yeah. So I've seen some people list their or a separate phone number. So be able to be found and contacted. So I do recommend people put a number there that people can reach you. Of course, you have to manage it, but, you know, put a separate number that you know it's just a recruiter calling, as opposed to your regular phone. And then the things that I look for, I guess that's probably where the rubber meets the road. I look for as much detail as I can, what you do. I do look at education background. It's almost like it is a resume, the more I'm speaking about it, right? You know, good university, stability, progression in the jobs that you've done, and looking at what you did, some of your accomplishments. That can be all captured on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn also has the other interesting thing about skills, you know, things that you are taking, courses to keep up to date. All those things differentiate you.
And I know you mentioned, and you're talking about active people who are currently working. What advice, what thoughts do you have for people who have been, you know, COVID, the whole journey, many people aren't working. What is your recommendation to them, those folks who might not be currently working and are now thinking about reaching out to someone like yourself, a recruiter, particularly when it relates to this gap question? Hey, I got a gap in my resume or my profile.
So two things we look at there. How long is that gap? And the key question that will be asked is, okay, yes, COVID happened, life happens, things out of your control. And then a key question would be, what have you been doing since then? Right. So the answer to that will tell myself and others a lot. So there is no ideal question, but we're looking for someone who's not just sitting around waiting for things to happen. Any type of proactivity, personal development, volunteering, you know, continuing to be a contributor, is all important, because it's understandable, right? There's a lot of people that were affected, but what did you do in response to that will say a lot.
And I know I could just fire questions at you all day here. And I know it's so relevant, so interesting in terms of what it is that's, you know, people are looking for work all the time. I mean, it's what we do. We pay the bills, right? We need to secure this. I know there's you talk about your work, you're an executive recruiter as well. Is there any difference between the two? I mean, or is it just the same function?
It's essentially the same function. It is a match. Because we do both. I like to say, because salary levels, speaking of funny thing, are almost the same, if you will, right? A senior engineer can be paid more as an executive in a non-tech company. So it's not the salary. The process is essentially the same. Source, screen, secure. There's also some testing that's involved, sometimes more so on the executive side, maybe leadership, personality, more so than the engineering side, but they'll still do a lot of programming testing too. So as I'm speaking out loud, I'm thinking, yeah, there's not much difference if I really just net, you know, granularize it, like you said, what the process is. So,
This is a help the coach session here, which is, I've got Raymond talking to me about this. Because I work with folks and they say, how do I put, what are references all about? And this can be my last one, Raymond, I tell you, if someone is pulling together their references, what's key on it? And I heard you talk about a couple of things as, you know, people that you report to, and also the fatigue that happens with references often.
Yeah, that's actually a really good topic. So I'll speak to what I look for. Some of it is subtle. So the situation is a candidate's about to get an offer, and I've asked them for three references. Now, sometimes it's a bit of a test. I don't say who, but I always, the first pass, I want to see who they give me. because if they give me direct supervisors who hire them and can give performance reviews, I do like that more so than people who may be peers. Because in the end, it's your supervisor that might have more of an insight into your performance, right? So if people say, okay, here's three of my managers, great. That also tells me maybe there are no skeletons in their closets. And speaking very, very bluntly, right? Some people do, and it's fine. So we just, in the end, looking for how secure, how self-aware are they by the type of referees they give me. So that's one thing, right? So I think supervisors are often better. But if the role is a managerial role where you do have peers and subordinates, that's also important too. Give me a 360 version of yourself from a referee perspective. Then later on, I look for how fast the referees respond to my request to do a reference. So be careful as a job seeker not to go to the well too often, because your referees may get fatigued, right? Getting asked the same questions by recruiters, or they're busy themselves. So make sure you give them when you're pretty sure that the employer is going to make an offer, which is another very subtle tactic. Employers and recruiters should only ask when it's near an offer stage, right? So that way you can also protect your referee's fatigue level. Those are kind of two very things that you may not think about, but yeah, be aware of.
Well, I like to say get 5 to 7 so you have some that you can put on a different applications, different opportunities, yeah. Especially as you get tired. Good points. This is a great discussion. I love the recruitment process. I love seeing people land. I mean, that's what a lot of the work I do is people successfully landing. And, you know, what does it mean to you when you kind of do your job, kind of live the dream of the recruiter in the perfect scenario? What does it mean to you?
Yeah. In the end of the day, it is one of those jobs where I get to make people smile. I guess in the end, that's really it. Been doing it long enough that it touches on impact. It touches on making a difference. And like you said, it is a big part of people's lives. So that smile is really, in the end, the reward. That's probably as simple as that.
Well, Raymond, we've known each other for a while. And yes. I just want to thank you for taking the time to jump on this conversation. Tell us a little bit about the two sides of your business and then how someone might get a hold of you.
Yeah, sure. Email for sure. And I'll give you my phone number as well at the as I described. So you mentioned there's two. One website or one company is Go Recruitment. And that's the website, gorecruitment.com. That side of a business focuses just on technology companies. So you'll see job listings there relevant to that. The other business is Go Futures HR, gofuturesHR.com. So that one focuses on placing managerial and executives within the school districts. So not teachers, but these are superintendents, secretary treasurers, directors of IT, the management of a school district. So we work with, I think we have worked with most of the school districts in our province. So those are the two sides. There is some overlap sometimes when there is an HR role or a finance CFO role, because those individuals are typically more cross-functional, but they are quite separate. So depending on your audience, they may want to contact me accordingly. Or to make it easier, they can just send me an email, which is raymond@gorecruitment.com. And my phone number is 778-869-9268.
Well, Raymond, thank you so much, and enjoy yourself. And thanks again for all this, me peppering you with little questions here, because I'm always curious, and it has changed a lot. And thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Barry. You enjoy and have a good day.
Thanks again to Raymond Toe, and thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get a hold of me, have an idea for a possible guest, or would like to contact anyone who has appeared here on the Reboot Forward podcast, visit my website at rebootforward.com and drop me a note. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, let's reboot forward.